Welcome to MoneyWeb Now. Business news every morning.
It's Monday, 9 May. I'm Simon Brown, coming to you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, chatting with Nikunza, we're going to be talking US. I mean, good job starter, but just more equity selling. The market's not liking it at all. And some China data out about half an hour ago. Also, we're going to be chatting with Andrew Lane from Deloitte. It's a mining conference this week, and we want to touch on, in particular, soft generation and the future of energy in Africa. And then Kingsley Williams from Satrix. They've got a new healthcare ETF coming later this month, currently in IPO. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb. Sibanye-Stillwater lost $4 billion in gold sales in 3 months. This is the impact of the ongoing industrial action. And by all accounts, it's going into the current quarter and hasn't yet been resolved, with not much resolution in sight. Business Day, emergency measures put in place to stabilize jet fuel supplied OR Tambo. The supply has been curtailed in the recent weeks due to flood damage in KZN. I've had reports and anecdotal reports of some international flights not coming into South Africa because they're worried they can't get fuel to go home. Morning markets, US was red on Friday, S&P off 0.6, NASDAQ down 1.2%. Asia is red, Sydney off 1.2, Tokyo down 2.2%. Commodities mostly under pressure. Gold, $1,876. Brent, the one green spot, $112.96 a barrel. Platinum, $939. Palladium, $2,049 an ounce. Rand, $1,609. Bitcoin under massive pressure, $33,690. Top 40, looking for about a 520-point red opening. That's a little over 0.9%. No 10 cent today. Hong Kong is closed for National Day.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Nikunza, Senior Portfolio Manager, Sanlam Private Wealth. Nick, appreciate the early morning time. I mentioned in the intro there, more good jobs data out from the US on Friday, but seemingly the market is sort of sanguine to good jobs data and seems a lot more worried about Fed rates. And we saw more selling on Friday, which was a volatile and ultimately tough week for US.
Yeah, morning, Simon. You're right. I mean, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, you know, they published quite a, I guess, another strong jobs report. I mean, they added 428,000 jobs in April. Market was looking for, I think, about 390. So it was a beat. But I think it's a little bit backward looking, these monthly non-farm, as important as they are, is a little bit backward looking. I think more concerned now with what's happening on the inflation front. And for me, everything comes, what do you put on your watch list? Right now, it's that US 10-year note. And well above 3% again. I think that's sort of spooking the market. Volatility is up and certainly has a risk-off theme about things at the moment.
It does have a risk-off theme. And data out of China in the last hour, exports, April exports at a two-year low. That, of course, because of their zero COVID policy. It is, I mean, everything seems to be sort of crunching. And is this a sit in the sidelines and wait for things to settle, or opportunity, or just energy?
So, I mean, if you have to just look at what is happening in front of us right now. So, you know, you look at what's happening with rates worldwide. Mm. So if rates are rising, central banks are taking liquidity out of the market. In all intents and purposes, we all can accept inflation projections are rising too. And growth projections, you mentioned the Chinese number now. I mean, it's pretty much self-inflicted. But around the rest of the world, growth is dropping. So you've got dropping growth, rising rate expectations, rising inflation rates, and also, Simon, to mention the fact that oil, you mentioned that in your intro. I mean, this is a real problem for emerging markets with a high oil price of $100 a barrel. So all in all those sort of factors in it, you've got to say it is risk off. If I had the opportunity and I wasn't sort of a long-term investor and I had the ability to be, maybe if I was a hedge fund, I'd certainly be looking at getting a little bit more into cash right now and wait for the dust to settle, I think.
And in that long-term portfolio, I mean, is it just buying the good quality stocks at what in some cases are very cheap prices and then let that long-term play out, which is what really investing is about?
Yeah, so I mean, where we are right now is, you know, you've got to look at what the theme is right now. The theme is we've come out of a decade of no inflation, of pretty much that Goldilocks scenario the Americans use, and we're heading into a period now which quite frankly, a lot of young, showing my age here, Simon, a lot of young traders on the desk have never been in an environment where inflation is knocking on the door of double digits, and we're rising rates. We've got bond yields in Germany for a better part of a decade were negative, and now they're turning positive. So quite unique. But against that circumstances, and against that scenario, there are opportunities. Definitely, you know, there are things that do well in higher inflation. There are things that do badly. Of course, the first thing that you want to avoid is these high growth tech stocks that don't really make money, because when rates rise, you know, as we all know, they're going to be on the margin. And you've seen that with the Nasdaq. Nasdaq's been a huge underperformer. And in fact, caught from the headlines from last week, I think the Nasdaq sitting at whatever it was, you know, worst 5 weeks I think it's had in the better part of a decade. So, yeah, avoid those, I'd start with.
And then is it back to good old-fashioned value play and consumer, non-discretionary and the like?
Yeah, I think it's back to what we used to do. Look at the numbers. Look at the cash flows. Look for profitable businesses. Look at solid businesses. And I guess what ticks the box for that is old-fashioned value. And also look with inflation, Simon. You know, which big, large, monster companies can pass this inflation on or not pass it on to consumers and be able to sort of suck it up? You know, the likes of the old-fashioned retailers, the Walmarts, even ShopRite locally to a certain extent. You know, you got to right now, as lovely it is to look at these high-flying techs, they've probably got further to go, and I'd stay away from those and get back to basics for a change.
Old-fashioned investing, I like it. We'll leave it there. Nick Kuntz, Senior Portfolio Manager, Sunma Private Wealth. Appreciate the early morning time.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement, and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Turning now with Andrew Lane. He is energy resources and industries leader at Deloitte. Andrew, appreciate the early morning time. We've got another sort of focus on mining this week in South Africa. Couple of points to touch on, I suppose. The first time I'm really curious around South African mining companies and the self-generation opportunity in terms of power. The minister allowed this towards the end of last year. I've spoken with a couple of mining execs, and my sense is that there is a fairly large move to generating your own independent power in the sector.
Morning, Simon, and thanks for the time. Yeah, you're quite right. I mean, there is a very significant move towards generating your own power. I think most of the mining majors have made fairly significant announcements around their intentions to go renewable. Some, I think, even going beyond the 100 megawatts that you're allowed without a generating license.
And I mean, this does, I mean, the first thing, obviously, which it does for them, it gives them security of power, which is a huge deal. My sense is it also, the payback times are actually quite quick in terms of, you know, some 3, maybe 5 years, fairly quick payback. And truthfully, this is going to put them in a stronger position in terms of just their operations and costs involved.
Look, I think a 3 or 4 year payback might be a bit aggressive, but yes, it does yield a return. I think that your point is right. In the first instance, it's about energy security, but in the second instance, it's about reducing cost. So energy security, reducing cost, and ultimately also carbon footprint. Mm-hmm. Remember, a lot of these industries struggle with scope 1, 2, and 3 emissions, and if they can clean up their sources of power, that makes a big difference.
And that's going to be, I mean, I imagine a big theme of the week is going to be that decarbonization, how the mining companies sort of get cleaner, but also the talk around. I mean, I saw a talk by Julian Gluvel from Thungela last week, where he's talking around coal and how coal might be dirty, but it's an important part of the global energy supply, and there's that frankly fairly delicate balance.
Yeah, Yeah, and I think coal has been given an extended lease of life thanks to the conflict in Ukraine. Look, I think coal is going to be around for a while.
Yeah.
I think it will diminish over time, but it won't disappear completely. And I think, you know, what the coal miners are pushing for, and what the minister is pushing for, is clean coal technologies. And, you know, if we can get that right and that's economic, it might extend the life of coal as well.
And part of the challenge, and you talk around coal. I mean, I agree. I you know, in an ideal world, we go off coal, but that ideal world is a long, long way away. I mean, large swaths of Asia are building new coal-fired power plants as we speak right now. I mean, it's going to be that process and finding the new energy. But the mining companies have got other challenges. I mean, I think particularly coal, and I think Transnet and getting their coal to Richards Bay coal terminal, where they're sitting in a sweet spot in terms of pricing, but they're getting infrastructural challenges.
Yeah, look, Transnet seems to be a bit of a thorn in the side of the industry at the moment. All of the bulk commodity suppliers are complaining about Transnet. I think the Minerals Council has put the number at about 35 billion rand lost as a result of Transnet issues. Yeah.
Is there a sense that Portia Derby, who's been in there now maybe 2 years, is sort of starting to improve? I mean, is there a light at the end of the tunnel, which isn't a train?
Well, look, certainly from what you read in the newspaper, they are starting to talk more about private involvement and you know, partnering with the private sector. Whether they were ready to go the whole distance and open up those heavy haul lines to private operators, I think that's still to be seen.
Last question around financing, particularly looking at energy in the broader continent, South Africa and up north of us. We've certainly seen a lot of banks, to a degree, pulling back on financing energy in terms of ESG concerns. Is that going to be a thorny topic at the week ahead?
Look, I think there's a certain inevitability that cost of capital goes up for dirtier industries.
Mm-hmm.
So I think certainly publicly most investors are favouring cleaner investments. But you know, you can always find somebody who's willing to invest in coal.
I suppose it comes down to it's a numbers game, and particularly with prices as they are. You know, as you say, there's someone who'll look at those numbers and say they work for me. Andrew Lane, energy resources and industries leader at Deloitte, appreciate the time this morning.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement, and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now. On the money. Also available on podcast.
Jane and I with Kingsley Williams. He's the CIO at Satrix. They've got a new healthcare ETF, currently an IPO, listing later in the month. Kingsley, appreciate the early morning time. Healthcare ETF, the story for healthcare is in one sense simple, and in the other sense compelling. We have an aging population globally, and new technologies are helping us live longer, deal with more health issues, and it makes for a really strong growth sector.
Yeah, morning, Simon. Thanks. We find with investing in healthcare quite an interesting investment case there, because we have actually seen the human life expectancy over the last 25, increase over by about 25 years over the last century. So we're living longer, and therein lies a virtuous circle that as we live longer, we inevitably spend more on staying healthy. And in fact, there's research out saying that, you know, the average American is probably going to spend 3.5 times more at the age of 70 than someone half that age. So, you know, as we live longer, we spend more on trying to stay healthy and remaining healthy, and therein lies an investment case.
And it's a giant, you know, healthcare. I think we often just think of drug manufacturers, we think of hospitals, and of course the practitioners. But there's a whole lot more to it. I mean, there's biotech. There's the equipment side, which is a fairly chunky sector within the healthcare space, and those are everything from MRI scanners to hospital beds.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what this particular ETF aims to give exposure to for investors is not just a sort of a clean carve out of the healthcare sector, and you know, dominated by the big pharma companies that you would typically find dominating that sector, but actually looking below those, you know, dominant companies, and looking at where companies are really at the forefront of innovation and developing new solutions to solving medical challenges. So, yeah, that focuses on equipment and devices, which dominates the index at about 40% of the exposure. Looks at biotech companies, so companies really in the pioneering space of biotech, and also services. And services are quite topical at the moment. We've had a lot of trials take place over the last 2 years with developing the COVID vaccine. And there are companies that specialize on doing those clinical trials. They're known as clinical research organizations. So, so they play a big role in ensuring that medicines and pharmaceuticals actually reach the shelves and can be dispensed to the wider population.
The underlying index, I was looking at the details around it, and composition by country, it's just over 70% of the US. I'll come back to that in a second. What surprised me was Korea, South Korea second, Switzerland, Belgium, all floating around the sort of 3.5 to 5%. My sense around America at 70.8%, that is really where the company is registered more than anything else. For example, Pfizer, yes, they might be an American company, but of course they're selling their products globally.
Yeah, exactly. That's always the challenge when you look at companies that are U.S. domiciled, is that, if you look at the top 20 names in MSCI World, 19 of those are all U.S.-based, and the other one is Swiss-based, but all those companies are global. Serving the global population, we consume their products and services on a daily basis, and so too, we live in a globalized world. But just because it's 70% U.S. based doesn't mean that they're only serving that market. But the U.S. is a large market, mm-hmm. and is very much at the forefront of servicing an aging population. The ETF would obviously give you exposure to that dynamic playing out as their population ages and the baby boomers move into retirement. But we see another interesting case in that, even in emerging markets like China, with their low growth rates low birth rates over the last few decades, that they've also got an aging population issue. Mm. And similarly, they will start spending more on healthcare into the latter years of people's lives. So, but what's interesting about this strategy as well, Simon, is that it aims, there's actually two very interesting dynamics at play with healthcare. One is that investors typically invest in healthcare because it tends to be a more defensive strategy, mm-hmm. because it's going to be decoupled from the investment cycle. People are going to spend on healthcare when they're sick, regardless of what the economy is doing. So it has those nice defensive properties about it. But because of what this ETF specifically targets in looking at companies on the forefront of innovation, it also offers a growth dynamic hopefully target above average earnings growth relative to the market overall. So those two those are two interesting features that the ETF offers.
We'll leave it there. It's still an IPO running until 17 May. Contact your stockbroker if you're interested in that. Listing date 26 May. Target to a total expense ratio coming in at 0.6%. That was Kingsley Williams, CEO at Satrix, talking around that new healthcare ETF coming. Certainly a sector which I think is worth having a very good look at in terms of putting it into your portfolio. And that's our question today on our LinkedIn and Twitter. Will you be applying for this ETF, or will you perhaps waiting for the listing and then purchasing it? Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. That's it for today. On Friday, we were chatting with Jimmy around the Sibanye Stillwater, which had a horror Thursday after the update. And then truthfully, Friday was no better. It went down 7.9% on Thursday and about another 4% and change on Friday. The question we asked you, are you buying PGM stocks at this point? A fifth of you said, nope, not buying, got plenty. That's me. I got plenty. I don't need more. And then evenly split, 40% each of the remaining were either buying and you're saying, yep, they are cheap. I think they agree with that point. Others were concerned and said, nope, not a buyer. Risks abound. Have your vote, have your say on our LinkedIn and Twitter profiles at MoneyWeb. This show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. Podcast available just after 7. And thanks to my team, Eddie Nobuchle, Nicole Tetetso, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning contribution. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now. On the money.